The word insomnia was Googled more in 2020 than ever before. That's according to data from the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. Some experts have even created the term COVID-somnia or Coronasonia. Things like disrupted daily routines and missing out on hobbies or socialization can take a big toll, it turns out, on our sleep quality. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you found it more difficult to get to sleep or stay asleep recently? Have your sleep patterns changed or felt disrupted? What has helped you get a better night's sleep? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. David Plante is an assistant professor of psychiatry at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and medical director of Wisconsin Sleep and the Wisconsin Institute for Sleep and Consciousness. David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Rob.
Well, have you been seeing this and hearing this in your own practice, in your own community, people having trouble sleeping over the last year?
I mean, I think for sure that it's been a growing epidemic along with COVID-19. And, you know, COVID-19 has really affected so many different parts of all of our lives. And so it makes some sense that it's going to affect our sleep since we spend a third of our lives actually sleeping.
What kind of things, I guess, are predictable here? Right? We're disrupting our schedules. We're disrupting our routines. That it makes sense that might disrupt the sleep part of our schedules too, right?
Absolutely, Rob. I mean, we're very much creatures of habit, and our sleep-wake patterns really rely quite a bit on sort of these cues that we have all day long that really have been disrupted by COVID-19. So the time that we normally wake up to go to work, the time that we normally eat meals, the times that we socialize and do certain things, really everything's kind of been jumbled together. So it can be very difficult for people to have a good consolidated night of sleep.
And let's throw stress into the mix. People worried about getting the disease, their loved ones catching it, the economic damage. Am I going to lose a job? That kind of thing. Stress, I imagine, isn't going to make things any better for our sleep.
Absolutely. So insomnia, we know, is worsened by stress. And when you have a lot to worry about or a lot on your mind, it can be very difficult to be able to allow yourself to fall asleep.
There's also been a blurring of the boundaries between work and home. I mean, some people have worked from home always. More of them are doing it now. Does the fact that more people are doing more of their jobs in the place where they live and sleep, does that throw people off?
Yes, I would definitely say that when people lose their boundaries between home and work, that can be very difficult. And a lot of times when those boundaries break down, it's not just in the time that we do the work, it's where we do the work in our home. For example, a lot of people, especially if there's a lot of folks in the house, may try to find a place like in the bedroom where they start, you know, doing their emailing and their day-to-day work. And then they can find it very difficult to wind down and sleep because they've actually turned the bed into their home office, so to speak. So a lot of things can happen.
How do we know to draw the line between, okay, occasionally I have a bad night of sleep, no big deal, and yeah, this is a problem that I maybe should try to tackle?
Well, I think the biggest thing for people to keep in mind is how their sleep is impacting them during the day and their functioning. So, you know, it is very common, like you had said, for people to have an occasional night of insomnia. I think everyone at some point in time has had difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep. But when you start to notice it more regularly, it becomes more of the rule than the exception. And then also if you start to notice that, you know, maybe you're more impaired during the day, your concentration is worse, you're having more headaches, you're more fatigued, those types of things, then it may be time to do something about it.
Talking to David Plante from UW-Madison, assistant professor of psychiatry there. He's with the Wisconsin Institute for Sleep and Consciousness. We're talking about how our sleep has been disrupted over the year of the pandemic and what we can do about it. You can join in with your experiences, your own solutions, maybe your questions at 800-642-1234. So, David, some people have a lot of experience dealing with their sleep problems. For those people who are new to this, what kind of recommendations would you have for them, the basics of sleep hygiene that they can start to tackle?
Sure. So I think what's really helpful, especially if you have a new problem with sleeping that started since the pandemic, is to try to take a step back and think about, you know, what might have changed since, you know, the start of COVID-19. So, you know, are you working from home? And if so, how has your schedule changed or your work life changed? Are you sleeping in later? Are you working in your bedroom? Have you started to or stopped doing things that you used to do, like exercise regularly at a specific time or those types of things? And try to think, you know, what's changed now, because you can oftentimes pinpoint what might be worth sort of zeroing in on from a treatment or a sleep hygiene standpoint. You know, one thing we always recommend is trying to keep a regular wake time, broadly speaking, 7 days a week. A lot of times that can sort of fall by the wayside during the pandemic. We also recommend things like avoiding too much alcohol before bed. We know that there's been a rise in alcohol consumption as well, which can actually disrupt the quality of your sleep. We also recommend trying to get exercise, not too close to bed, because that can make it hard, but exercise certainly helps quite a bit. And we've noticed a decrease in a lot of people's physical activity since they're kind of holed up at home. So there's a lot of things that we would do, but I would say those are some good basic starting points.
We've already gotten some emails and Facebook comments from our listeners. Cassandra emailed to say for her, it's easier to sleep after feeling productive, but that usually means using a computer. Cassandra asks, how bad is, you know, the blue light from computer screens and other screens before sleeping?
Yeah, so that's a really great question. So we have in our body something called a circadian rhythm, which you can think of as an internal metronome. It's a drive to be awake that goes up and down every 24 hours. And light is the thing that tells that circadian rhythm what time of day it is. So blue light in particular is the frequency of the visible spectrum of light that shifts or affects that rhythm. So a lot of the screens that we have, computer screens, for example, emit a lot of blue light and can really kind of trick our bodies into thinking that it's daytime when in fact it's nighttime. So I think what Cassandra is getting at is that, you know, if you get too much blue light exposure before you go to bed, it can actually make it harder to fall asleep. In her case, it sounds like being productive allows her to, I don't know, maybe feel that she's calm enough to allow herself to fall asleep. But generally speaking, we try to avoid too much blue light or screen time before bed, especially if you're having trouble falling asleep. And there are also newer computers, they're in their operating systems, will often have a blue light reduction. And you can even get either blue light blocking goggles or screen covers sometimes if it's a real problem for you.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Lisa is with us in Madison. Lisa, hi.
Hi. I have a sleep disorder, so I've always had to work really well on my sleep hygiene to minimize the effects of the disorder. And one of the biggest things that I've noticed in an app that I use for tracking my sleep is I get deeper sleep and better sleep when I stop eating 3 to 4 hours before bedtime. My heart rate ends up getting lower and I get a nice, much more restful sleep. My body's not having to digest food and go through those processes. It can just get off to sleep.
Interesting, Lisa. Thank you for sharing that. And I have heard this, David. Is that, you know, unique to Lisa or is that a thing?
No, it's certainly a thing. I think the data and clinical experience is a little bit varied. I'd assume that Lisa is talking about maybe an app that's attached to a fitness tracker, so something like a Fitbit or something like that that's helping her to keep track of her sleep. You know, certainly we don't recommend people eating large meals before they go to sleep, because usually you don't want to have a lot of food in your stomach or your digestive tract, because that can make it a little bit harder to sleep. You know, sometimes if people are feeling hungry, we can recommend a very light snack before they go to bed. That sometimes is helpful, but certainly avoiding large meals too close to bedtime. So, you know, what Lisa's experienced in terms of finding that if she eats too close to bedtime or even 3 or 4 hours before, it sounds like her sleep isn't as good quality. So if that's something you've noticed or a pattern that you've picked up on, you know, certainly I would encourage, you know, keep on doing that type of thing. And that's the kind of thing that a lot of people can do on their own when they're trying to figure out what might make their sleep better for them.
Lisa, thanks a lot for that call. Now, when is it time to say, hey, this is bad enough and I'm not able to solve it on my own? When should people be talking maybe to their doctor or a sleep lab or something like that when they're having sleep trouble?
Well, usually, I mean, because insomnia is such a common problem, we don't recommend going straight to the sleep center. Usually talking to your doctor is like your regular primary care provider is a good place to start. And I would say, again, when you start noticing that it becomes more the you know, the rule than the exception, when you start noticing that you're having more problems during the day because you know, you're not sleeping well at night. And also when it starts to impact you and your loved ones, if you notice that you're just much more irritable, you're not yourself, you know, it's certainly worth sort of getting attention, because there are lots of ways to treat insomnia that can be quite effective.
We're talking to David Plant, professor of psychiatry and director of Wisconsin Sleep and the Wisconsin Institute for Sleep and Consciousness. We're looking at disrupted sleep during the pandemic and what we can do about it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you had a problem sleeping, especially over the last year? Maybe new problems sleeping. What happened? What do you think caused it? Did you find solutions? And do you have questions about how all this sleep stuff works anyway? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with David Plant, assistant professor of psychiatry at the UW-Madison, medical director of Wisconsin Sleep and the Wisconsin Institute for Sleep and Consciousness. You can join in as we talk about sleep problems, especially in the pandemic year. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Luke posted on Facebook, he says going to sleep initially is easy for him, but going back to sleep after waking up in the middle of the night is always a challenge. He says a quiet room doesn't help. Maybe putting on a nature show he could simply watch without having to follow works for him. Let's talk about, first of all, the basic problem. Falls asleep okay, can't go back to sleep if he wakes up. Is this a common type of, I guess, insomnia?
Absolutely. So insomnia, it can basically be defined as difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep despite adequate opportunity to sleep. So certainly difficulty sleeping through the night is a very common problem.
And are there particular solutions for that falling back asleep issue as opposed to the initial falling asleep problem?
Well, there's a lot of different things that can cause or contribute to insomnia. So it really varies from person to person. And I can't really say from the caller of the Facebook post exactly what may be going on. But generally speaking, sometimes what happens is people wake up in the middle of the night and then they may start to do things that actually make it harder for them to fall back to sleep. So sometimes they'll spend a lot of time in bed, for example, struggling to fall back asleep and start getting frustrated. They'll start looking at the clock, which will also make them more frustrated and sort of continue the problem. So oftentimes what we'll recommend is much like I think the Facebook post was saying, is they kind of get up, go to another room and do some quiet, boring activity, you know, watching a TV program in low light that maybe isn't that exciting until people start to feel their eyes getting heavy again and then going back to the bedroom and trying to go back to sleep. Because what can happen is if we spend a lot of time in bed struggling to sleep, either in the middle of the night or even at the beginning of the night, our mind and our brain can start to pair the bed and the bedroom as a place that we struggle to sleep rather than a place that we do sleep. So those are some general recommendations we like to give people if they're having trouble sleeping through the night or with middle of the night awakenings.
You described me pretty well there. I will sometimes do the angrily, stubbornly, like make myself try to fall asleep, glancing at the clock occasionally. One of my solutions is to have some boring
turning around
books.
That clock is a good place to start for sure for just about everyone, because what I tell my patients is you don't need to know that it's 3 o'clock in the morning. It doesn't do you any good to know the time. So you can still use an alarm, but you don't need to look at the clock all night. That can be a real trigger for people.
That's good information for me. Let's go back to our callers now. Tammy is with us in Mason. Tammy, hi.
Yes, hello. And that last talker that you talked to, he said everything that I've been doing. I turn clocks around, anything. I move to different rooms. But I only can fall asleep when I have just a tiny bit to eat, but then I'm up and I can't get back to sleep. And I've been going through this for like 15 years.
Ooh. Was there anything that changed in your life, Tammy, that kind of started your sleep difficulty?
Well, all my children were preemies, so I had to wake up every 3 hours to feed them. But now they're 15 and 14, and I'm still in the same thing, same routine. And so I get out of the bed, and I have a little bit to eat. Once I eat, I can sleep for a couple hours. But then I'm wide awake again, and I get so exhausted. I'm 53 now.
Wow. Well, Tammy, thank you for sharing your story and good luck to you. Now, we won't ask you to diagnose Tammy in particular, but for that thing where, as in her case, we've been forced to live in a certain sleeping schedule, in this case, up every 3 hours with premature children. How can we get ourselves back out of routine once we've locked into it? a bad routine, I should say, once we've locked into it, David.
Right. So, you know, it depends. There's a lot of different ways. I mean, behavioral change is hard, you know, for a lot of different areas of our health. So I think the first step is to try to take stock in what's happening. So sometimes people can take sleep diaries or sleep logs that are they're available on the internet, just to kind of write down what time they're going to bed, what time they're waking up, and certain patterns that come up. And we use these a lot clinically to try to get a sense of what's going on over time. That they can be really helpful because a lot of times we have this tendency to remember our worst nights as well. So sometimes it may not be quite as bad when you sort of look at the long-term picture. Sometimes people have trouble doing those kinds of things and need an additional person to kind of take a look at it and walk them through that. So that's where sometimes getting your primary care provider involved or even seeing a sleep medicine specialist. There's a whole area of sleep medicine called behavioral sleep medicine that I sort of describe it to patients as sort of like having a personal trainer for your sleep, where you go into really a lot of detail about what your sleep patterns look like and ways that you can try to straighten it out. So there's lots of different ways, but I think the first place to start is to try to take a look at what you're doing and take it apart from there.
Good luck to you, Tammy. Let's go to Mary now in Chippewa Falls. Mary, hi.
Hi. Hey. This is a little confusing for me because all of the people that I'm related to genetically have always not really had a schedule. I mean, my mom and dad and my brothers, and I just, and me too, we seem to be night owls. And of course, that's difficult to do sometimes. But you could call my house in the middle of the night and somebody would be awake and answer the phone immediately. So I, you know, when my kids were little, yeah, I got them to school and everything, but it still didn't change. And I always go back to the, you know, maybe not, it's not really a night owl either because it's kind of no schedule at all is what it really is.
But Mary, and do you feel like you end up getting enough sleep on that weird schedule?
As long as I'm in charge of it, sure. But I don't know. Is there some reason for health that I should try to change?
Mary, thanks a lot for the call. Okay, so I think it sounds like, David, she's getting enough sleep, but not on the, you know, 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. or whatever schedule. If it ain't broke, should she try to fix it?
Well, I think in general, if it isn't broke, don't try to fix it when it comes to your sleep. People are different and they have sort of different tendencies, especially, the caller had alluded to being a bit of a night owl. So what that means is that circadian rhythm that I was talking about earlier, that drive for alertness that goes up and down every 24 hours, that internal metronome, you know, in some people, in the majority of people, it sort of has typical hours where, you know, the usual sleep period will be somewhere around 10 p.m. to somewhere around, you know, 6 a.m. or so, ballpark. But the reality is people can be on either side of that. And if people are night owls, they tend to want to go to bed later and wake up later. It's what we call a delayed sleep phase. And then there are also larks, you know, morning people who like to go to bed early and wake up early as well. So that's just people's kind of normal natural tendencies. And if it's not a bother to the person, and if their schedule allows them to do that, then certainly it's not a problem. What we'll often see in sleep clinic is when people, especially if they have a delayed sleep phase, these extreme night owls, for example, they start running into problems because they're late for school or work or those kinds of things. So, I think that may be what's going on or that the caller was alluding to, but it's hard to say for sure.
Thanks a lot for that call. Time for one more caller. Courtney is with us in Appleton. Courtney, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
What did you want to ask about?
So kind of like the previous caller, I guess I have trouble. I work typically until around 10 p.m., and I have a hard time falling asleep after that, you know, until anywhere between 12 a.m. and 2 a.m. But, you know, then I lead to sleeping in the next day, and my husband works a normal, you know, 7 to 3, so he's up early, and I guess I'm just recommendations for how I can get myself to kind of mentally calm down.
Courtney, thanks a lot for that call. We just have a minute or so left, David. Any thoughts on how to get from work to sleep and maybe a little faster?
Well, what I'd say is what that does sound like is a common problem called, shift work to a certain degree, where when we have to work at different times, it makes it difficult for us to sleep sort of under a normal pattern. And what the caller is describing is very common, where, they've been at work, especially if they have a high stress job, for example, and they get home and then they need that wind down time, and it's difficult to do. Sometimes if you can find ways to wind down quickly by giving yourself a sort of space to relax, but then also maybe try to do some of the things you normally do right before bed ahead of time, so you don't have to worry about them quite as much. That may be a little bit easier to allow yourself to fall asleep a little bit faster or earlier.
Hope that helps, Courtney. And David, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
David Plant is an assistant professor of psychiatry at UW-Madison and medical director of the Wisconsin Institute for Sleep and Consciousness. He joined us for a look at sleep problems, especially ones people are experiencing during the pandemic.